Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Thursday, December 16th, 2021. The nearly $2 trillion social spending and climate programs bill championed by President Biden and most Democrats appears to be in trouble in the Senate. Reports that little progress in negotiations between the president and the all-important 50th Senate Democratic vote, Joe Manchin. Dozens of the president's State Department nominees are being held up by Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who is demanding a vote on sanctioning a Russian natural gas pipeline. And Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer vowing to keep the Senate in session over the holidays to get the nominees confirmed. The nominee to lead the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration promising to address the recent rise in roadway fatalities. President Biden meets with his COVID-19 response team as cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are on the rise again in the U.S. And three soldiers who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan receive the Medal of Honor, including one whose family fought for 16 years to show he deserved the nation's highest military decoration for his bravery. From the Associated Press, Democrats' vast social and environment package languished in Senate limbo Thursday as leaders' hopes for resolving holdout Senator Joe Manchin's demands and considering the bill in this year's waning days seemed all but dead. After weeks of setting a Christmas goal of moving the 10-year, roughly $2 trillion package through the chamber, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer barely mentioned the legislation as the day's business began. It was unclear whether Democrats would be able to win over Manchin without decisive intervention by President Joe Biden. So far, Biden's talks with Manchin have seemed gridlocked. That was from AP. We start with the White House view on the situation, on the bill known as Build Back Better. And a question to the Deputy Press Secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre.
Earlier this week, the White House described talks between the president and Senator Manchin as constructive and productive, but sources on the Hill say that these talks have actually been going, you know, very poorly, and it does now appear that Build Back Better doesn't have a path forward this year. So I'm wondering, how now would you describe the conversations between the two, and what, again, were those areas of productivity earlier this week?
So, as you all know, we don't go into specifics. We have a policy of not talking about private conversations, and even Manchin said that himself, person-to-person conversations should be kept private. The president discussions with lawmakers outside of readouts that we have, usually we keep that promise. So I don't have any more details to offer beyond what we've said this week. The president is determined to get this done as soon as possible. We're talking about cutting costs for American families. We're talking about child care, elder care. We're talking about prescription drugs, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, which is so critical and important to American families and just to Americans across the country, and also universal pre-K. All these things are critical, and that's what the president is going to continue to focus on.
The White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre in the White House briefing room with reporters. Some progressive Senate Democrats expressing frustration with the seemingly endless negotiations with Senator Manchin. Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii and Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts speaking with CNN reporter Manu Raju, who posted the clips on Twitter.
That's where he's at, and this is why if you have a 50-50 split Senate, you can have one person or two people just stop everything, and that is why people in our country should know that a 50-50 Senate sucks and we can't get things done.
We need to get this done. We have talked, we have talked, we have talked. It's time to put it on the floor and vote.
Senator Warren and Senator Hirono, both Democrats, interviewed by CNN in the hallways of the Senate office buildings. Again, that posting on Twitter. The Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who is leading a party which has uniformly opposed what the Democrats have been doing with social spending and climate, no matter what the size or what's in it, saying today on the Senate floor that he's happy that the Democrats are putting the effort on hold.
Our colleagues wanted to spend trillions upon trillions more dollars right into the teeth of runaway inflation that they've already caused. Yesterday, we got indications the far left's slapdash sprint may be hitting the pause button. Well, that would certainly be great news for America, for the American people. The best Christmas gift Washington could give working families would be putting this bad bill on ice.
The headline at rollcall.com, Senate Democrats look set to punt reconciliation bill to January. The original plan was to take up the sweeping safety net and climate spending package before Christmas. Joining us now is one of the reporters on that article, Jennifer Shutt. Thank you for being with us. President Biden, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, some other Democrats earlier this week sounded very optimistic. What's happened?
So this is one of the issues that Democrats, particularly President Biden, have had so far with centrist Democrats in the Senate, predominantly West Virginia's Joe Manchin. He has been saying for months that he has concerns about various provisions in that reconciliation package and how they would be paid for. And so these are some frustrations that Manchin has had with Democratic negotiations for months that are sort of coming to a point here as Congress looks towards its December recess and as President Biden and Democratic leader Schumer really have not been able to bring him fully on board with this package the way it is written now. And of course, because the Senate is split 50-50, if Democrats do not have Manchin on board, they cannot pass this legislation.
Senator Manchin has been asked repeatedly by reporters the past couple of weeks, maybe the past couple of months, what do you want in a bill? Has he ever given a full answer?
No, and I think that's one of the issues that reporters have been struggling with in reporting this story is that Senator Manchin has not given a clear list of exactly what he wants in the legislation or not in the legislation. We've been getting indications for months now about provisions he supports or doesn't support or has concerns with, but there's really been no sort of set firm list from Senator Manchin about what he's willing to support and what he's not willing to support. You know, whether or not that has taken place behind the scenes with the White House has not been fully reported out. But I think that's one of the challenges in this story right now is, you know, Democrats have had this bill in a few different forms throughout the past few months. And Manchin has always had criticisms with various elements in those packages. But we have not yet heard exactly what he would vote for.
In the past 24 hours, there's been a story that Senator Manchin blew up at a reporter when he was asked about the child tax credit. What happened there?
So I was not there for this. I did not witness this myself. But I think this goes to sort of the tense negotiations that have been happening behind the scenes with Democrats and the fact that, you know, because it seems like most of his colleagues, if not all of his Democratic colleagues in the Senate, are on board with the reconciliation package as it is now, you know, reporters are really talking with Manchin all day, every day. And it seems like he has gotten a little bit frustrated with that process and some of the questions that he has been asked as a United States senator about this sort of massive spending package.
Well, on that child tax credit, the current version does expire. There's been some talk about passing a standalone bill. How far has that gotten?
Those conversations have not gotten really far. One of the things we heard this week from Speaker Nancy Pelosi is that she really wants to hold out as long as she can and as Democratic leaders can with that end-of-year deadline for the child tax credit to try to use it to bring Manchin and potentially any other holdouts on board with this reconciliation package. And one of the things that Speaker Pelosi did mention during that press conference is that if Democrats have to wait until January to approve a final reconciliation package, there's potentially an option in there to make that child tax credit retroactive. So there might be a short gap, but Democrats would then try to fill that in if they can approve this in the new year.
We're talking with Jennifer Shutt from CQ Roll Call. One more question about the reconciliation bill. While the talks with Senator Manchin have been on and off again and now off, there's also that the bill is being reviewed by the parliamentarian in the Senate to see which provisions would survive the budget process. How far has that gotten?
That process has been underway for several weeks to a few months now for various elements of this reconciliation package, but it is still ongoing. And right now, it seems like it might take a little bit longer for Democrats and Republicans to debate in front of the parliamentarian about what elements of the package they believe are in and comply with this reconciliation law, you know, sort of that fast track process Democrats are using to advance this measure in the Senate without getting hung up on that 60-vote legislative filibuster process. And so that is also one of the things that seems to be slowing down Democrats' timeline as well, is just making sure that every element of the bill does comply with this process, which they have to do in order to use it.
Jennifer Schutt covers appropriations and budget for CQ Roll Call. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, ranking Republican on the Budget Committee, telling Fox News Wednesday night that the Build Back Better bill is dead forever because Senator Manchin says he won't vote for a bill that adds to the budget deficit, and the Congressional Budget Office analysis requested by Republicans shows that the deficit in the bill would be $3 trillion if all the programs were extended to 10 years. Today, Senator Graham holding a news conference, getting a question about Senator Joe Manchin and that new CBO scoring.
How often have you spoken with Joe Manchin this week about this?
I spoke to Joe when the numbers came out. I haven't spoken to him since. So he was the first person I called when the CBO score came out. And let's show the chart of the other groups who did this. The Wharton School of Business looked at the cost of Build Back Better, assuming the programs did not sunset before CBO. And they found $4.6 trillion to be the true cost. Joe had been working with Wharton, unbeknownst to me, because he trusts them, and he said, would you look at this bill without the sunsets? Then we got the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget that is sort of seen by both parties as Maya McGinnis's group as being honest brokers. They looked at the bill without the sunsets and including the revenue is $4.8 trillion. So when CBO came back using the same methodologies, they actually went to 4.9 if you include interest. It's over $5 trillion. So when you say CBO is fake, you have to believe that Wharton School of Business is fake, that Maya McGinnis's Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget is fake. I don't think Senator Manchin believes this is fake. So that'd be a good question. Joe, do you think the CBO score is fake? Do you think Wharton was fake? Do you think the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget is fake? Do you believe this bill is paid for? I think he would say no. So my conversations with him were short, but he was stunned that CBO would actually not only be in the ballpark, be a little bit higher. When it comes to the deficit, Wharton had 2.6, Committee for Responsible Federal Budget had 2.8, the CBO had $3 trillion. So I think what's happened here is that Joe is convinced he was right about the true cost of the bill. I think with the inflation numbers that came out Friday, and Larry Summers and others saying this is not transitory, that Senator Manchin is going to be a hard sell when it comes to voting for a bill that would be the largest bill in the history of the United States in terms of spending at a time of rampant inflation. But he will continue, I'm sure, to try to find some middle ground. There is no middle ground, I think, for Build Back Better. There may be some middle ground for some of the provisions that we can look at that we believe not to be inflationary, that can be rewritten in a fashion to do a better job.
Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican, ranking member on the Budget Committee, a news conference today on Capitol Hill. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois and the majority whip, telling the Hill newspaper that the new CBO scores requested by the Senate Republicans is in fact fake.
To start off, he takes the total amount of the package and cuts it in half. And now he says everything has to be paid out for 10 years. Well, you know, there comes a point where you got to say to Senator Manchin, if we're paying for everything that we have scheduled, We're keeping faith with the American people, and we're not adding to the deficit, and we're not making it worse for inflation. But for you to speculate what will this cost if these are extended for 10 years, it's just that. It's speculation. It's not really the reality of what we're doing.
Senator Dick Durbin, that interview in the hallways of the Capitol or in the Senate office building, posted by thehill.com. On Wall Street today, the Dow was down 29, NASDAQ down 385, S&P down 41. Labor Department says the number of unemployment insurance claims last week rose 18,000 to a total of 206,000, but the four-week average of unemployment claims down by 16,000 to 204,000. And that 204,000 is the lowest level since 1969. President Biden putting out a statement saying the four-week average is, quote, further evidence that our jobs recovery is one of the strongest ever. This from thehill.com. Democrats are threatening hardball tactics as they try to break a blockade by Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, that has left dozens of President Biden's State Department nominees in limbo. Democrats and the conservative firebrand are struggling to make progress toward an agreement that would trade votes on some of President Biden's ambassador nominees for a vote on sanctions related to the construction of the Russian Nord Stream 2 pipeline, a longstanding goal for Cruz, who has ensnared nominations across the State Department, the Treasury Department, and the U.S. Agency of International Development, USAID. Absent a deal, Democrats are warning that they are willing to keep the Senate in Washington, D.C. heading into Christmas. That was from The Hill. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer speaking about this on the Senate floor.
Last night, I filed cloture on 22 of President Biden's nominees that to date have been pointlessly stalled by Republican obstruction. 22. We're going to work until they're all confirmed by this chamber. And we may need to add more. In past years, many of these nominees would have sailed through with consent and cooperation. But this year, a handful of Republicans have hijacked the rules of the Senate to slow the process down. It's cynical, it's entirely pointless, and worst of all, it is damaging, seriously damaging, to our national security. This is the consequence of Republican obstruction. We're going to work on getting these nominees confirmed as long as it takes. And we could be back here in the near future doing this whole thing over again. For all the tortured logic we hear coming from the other side for why these nominations remain frozen, the fact is that my Republican colleagues who are holding these nominations up are deliberately making the American people less safe and making it harder for the administration to address the national security and economic challenges that face our nation. It's unacceptable, and we are going to work to confirm these important nominees.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor Thursday morning. The impasse over nominees has been building for literally months. This past Wednesday, Senator Chris Coons, Democrat from Delaware, tried to bring up and confirm a handful of nominees, and that's when Senator Ted Cruz objected and explained why.
Every senator here knows why I have holds on these nominees. Right now, as we speak, hundreds of thousands of Russian troops are massed on the border of Ukraine, waiting to invade. The reason for that is because Joe Biden surrendered to Vladimir Putin on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That is the direct cause for the threat of military invasion Ukraine faces right now. Putin didn't just wake up one day and decide to invade Ukraine. He has wanted to invade Ukraine for years, and in fact, he did so in 2014. But he stopped short of a full invasion because he needed to use the Ukrainian energy infrastructure to get Russian natural gas to the European market. Because of that, that is why Putin launched Nord Stream 2, to have a pipeline directly from Russia to Germany going undersea, to cut Ukraine out of the transit loop so then the Russian tanks could invade Ukraine. This body right now should be talking about the crisis in Ukraine and about how to counter Putin's aggression and expansionism. The best way to do so would be to immediately put sanctions on Nord Stream 2, sanctions that we had in place, bipartisan sanctions, that I authored, that both of the senators from Delaware supported, and that indeed had overwhelming bipartisan support from both houses of Congress, passed into law and worked.
Senator Ted Cruz on the Senate floor on Wednesday, and his hold on the nominees continuing into today. He has put dozens of the president's nominees on hold, though he has allowed some to be quickly confirmed, including his former Senate colleagues, Jeff Flake, Republican of Arizona, and Tom Udall, Democrat from New Mexico, to be U.S. ambassadors to Turkey and New Zealand, respectively. Craig Kaplan, C-SPAN's Capitol Hill producer, tweeting that the Senate is voting tonight on confirming Nicholas Burns as President Biden's first U.S. ambassador to China. And also, the Senate has voted along party lines to send the nomination of Holly Thomas to serve as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to the full Senate for future debate from the Judiciary Committee, where it deadlocked 11-11. So as they work through these nominees one at a time, instead of having a deal to get through them more quickly, and the Senate stays in session, perhaps through the weekend into the holidays, you can always watch it live on C-SPAN 2 television, on the C-SPAN Now app and at cspan.org, gavel to gavel. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now app and wherever you get your podcasts. A few more headlines. The Justice Department informing lawyers for families separated at the U.S.-Mexico border by the Trump administration that it would no longer seek to negotiate a settlement with payments to the families. That news coming from the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and it follows weeks of reports that the Biden administration was considering settling the case with payments of as much as $450,000. 12 remaining missionaries out of the 17 who were kidnapped by a gang in Haiti in October have been released, according to the Christian group that they worked for. A group of people who were taken hostage consists of Americans and one Canadian. At one point, the leader of the gang in Haiti had demanded $17 million or he would kill the missionaries. President Biden meeting today with his COVID-19 response team, talking about the latest steps to deal with the pandemic, especially the newly emerging and fast-spreading Omicron variant. There's a new study from the University of Hong Kong that finds that Omicron multiplies 70 times faster in the human bronchial tubes than the initial COVID-19 infection or the Delta variant, but the infection in the lung is significantly lower than the original SARS-CoV-2, and that may be an indicator of lower disease severity. Here's President Biden at the White House at the beginning of his meeting.
Due to the steps we've taken, Omicron has not yet spread as fast as it would have otherwise done, and that's happening in Europe. But it's here now, and it's spreading, and it's going to increase. For unvaccinated, we are looking at a winter of severe illness and death for unvaccinated, for themselves, their families, and the hospitals they'll soon overwhelm. But there's good news. If you're vaccinated, you have your booster shot, you're protected from severe illness and death, period. Number two, booster shots work. Three, boosters are free, safe, and convenient. About 60 million people have been boosted. So go get your shot today. Go get boosted if you had your first two shots. If you haven't, go get your first shot. It's time. It's time. It's past time. And we're going to protect our economic recovery if we do this. We're going to keep schools and businesses open if we do this. And I want to see everyone around enjoy that. I want to see them enjoy the fact that they're able to be in school, the businesses are open, and the holidays are coming. So get your booster shot. It's critically important. And if you haven't gotten your booster shot, get your first shot. We're in a situation where we have 83% of the American people have gotten one shot, 12 years and older. 400,000 shots per day now, 202 are fully vaccinated, 202 million are fully vaccinated, 57 million boosters, 1 million a day. So, but the whole point is, Omicron is here. It's going to start to spread much more rapidly at the beginning of the year. And the only real protection is to get your shots. If you get one shot, if you haven't gotten it yet, that'll help. If you're at the point where you have everything, including your booster, you're in really good shape. So move now. Move now. Thank you all very much.
Do you feel like your strategy is working? Thank you.
President Biden at the White House at the start of his meeting with the top government scientists on his COVID-19 response team, not taking any reporters' questions. CNBC has a story. An advisory panel for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Thursday recommended Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines over Johnson & Johnson's shot for adults 18 and over after finding dozens of people developed a rare blood clot condition following J&J vaccination, all of whom were hospitalized and 9 of whom died. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices voted unanimously to recommend Pfizer and Moderna over the J&J vaccine. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky still has to accept the recommendation. Vice President Kamala Harris announcing a new push to eliminate lead from water pipes and homes over the next 10 years, funded by billions of dollars from the bipartisan infrastructure law and focusing on communities that, as Harris put it, have historically been left out or left behind.
And the science is clear about what drinking water from a lead pipe can do to the human body. For adults, it can cause an increase in blood pressure and decrease kidney function. For children, it can severely harm mental and physical development. It can stunt growth, slow down learning, and cause irreparable damage to the brain. So the bottom line is that there is no reason in the 21st century for why people are still exposed to this substance that was poisoning people back in the 18th century. There is no good reason. But here's the truth, and it's a hard truth. Millions of people in our country, many of them children, are still exposed to lead every day. As many as 24 million housing units in our country contains substantial amounts of lead paint. As many as 10 million households get their water through lead pipes and service lines. And so do up to 400,000 schools and childcare facilities. Let's just reflect on that. In one of the most advanced nations in the world, this is happening right now in our country. In areas around our country, children are drinking from water fountains fed by lead pipes. They're sleeping in bedrooms coated with lead paint. And as a result, today, more than half of children under 6 in our country are at risk of lead exposure.
Vice President Kamala Harris speaking today at the headquarters of the AFL-CIO in Washington, D.C., and she also pointed out that the removal of lead from homes, schools, and workplaces will be done by newly created union jobs, and she said that will be a boost to the economy. And in addition to the money from the bipartisan infrastructure law, up to $350 billion from the state and local aid from the emergency COVID-19 relief law, known as the American Rescue Plan, will be able to be used to replace lead service lines, faucets, and fixtures. That clarification will be coming from the Treasury Department. The head of the Drug Enforcement Administration, Ann Milgram, announcing the results of a surge in drug enforcement to combat the threat of deadly fake prescription pills on social media and e-commerce platforms. And this comes a week after the announcement that over 100,000 Americans have died in a year for the first time from drug overdoses.
This past Tuesday, just 2 days ago, DEA completed a public safety surge, our second one since August, to target the most dangerous drug traffickers and drug trafficking networks that are pushing deadly drugs into our country. Our investigations revealed that these networks are directly linked to 39 overdose deaths, and 76 of our investigations involve criminal drug activity on Facebook and Facebook Messenger, on Snapchat, on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube, and on other social media platforms. 32 of our investigations are directly tied to Mexican drug cartels that are mass producing and distributing the fentanyl that is killing Americans. In total, between September 29th and December 14th of this year, the DEA seized over 8.4 million fake pills, over 5,400 pounds of methamphetamine, and hundreds of pounds each of cocaine, heroin, and marijuana, often in the same places that we've seized the fentanyl. We also seized 1,500 pounds of fentanyl during the enforcement surge. During the surge, the DEA has arrested 776 people, and we've also seized 288 firearms connected to these drug seizures. This record amount of counterfeit pills containing fentanyl seized by the DEA is chilling. Just 2 days ago, DEA agents in Arizona seized approximately 1.7 million pills and 13 pounds of fentanyl in a single operation. I am confident that the DEA agents and the task force officers prevented a significant number of overdoses and overdose deaths with just that seizure alone.
DEA Administrator Ann Milgram. President Biden's nominee to lead the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, had a Senate confirmation hearing today. Stephen Clift telling senators that if he's confirmed, he will address the dramatic increase in U.S. road deaths. He also spoke about a personal tragedy that he experienced involving a car crash when he was young.
NHTSA's mission of saving lives on our nation's roads is very personal for me, just as it is for too many Americans. While in high school, I rode in a caravan with a group of friends heading to a graduation gathering at the beach. One of the cars, driven by my best friend when changing lanes, crossed the median, flipped over, and collided with an oncoming car. Oleanders were the only median barriers at that time to protect against oncoming traffic. Three of four occupants, including my best friend, were killed. My life was changed forever. This tragedy led my parents in my hometown to start a graduation night event to reduce tragedies like this. And while neither alcohol nor drugs played a role in the event I just described, these safe and sober graduation night parties have undoubtedly prevented many senseless deaths in the 33 years since that terrible day. Since February 2nd, 2021, I have served as Deputy Administrator of NHTSA, working with some of the most dedicated and professional public servants I've ever encountered. NHTSA is focused on making our vehicles safer for everyone while integrating policies that make transportation more safe, equitable, and environmentally sustainable, top priorities of this administration. Like the rest of the department, I am gravely concerned about the increase in traffic fatalities during the COVID-19 pandemic. Secretary Buttigieg rightfully called it a crisis. While many stopped driving in the early days of the pandemic, those who remained on the road were more likely to engage in risky behaviors. As a result, we've seen an unprecedented rise in roadway fatalities. I am committed to turning this around. We have much to learn about why some driving behaviors changed during the pandemic, how we can encourage people to make safer choices, and how to change a culture that accepts the loss of tens of thousands of people in roadway crashes as inevitable.
Stephen Clift is nominated to be NHTSA Administrator, part of his opening statement before the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee today. As he mentioned, since February, he has been serving as Deputy Administrator. Before that, he was in California as a member of the California Air Resources Board and part of the California Department of Transportation. Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi is ranking Republican on the Senate committee. He asked today about a technology that he believes will lead to much safer driving, replacing human drivers with computers.
94% of the fatalities in automobile deaths are as a result of human error. You agree with that statistic, do you not, Dr. Clift?
I think behavioral circumstances are a factor in 94%. I wouldn't necessarily say it's human error in all cases.
Behavioral.
It is a factor.
Okay. We're past the point of having to debate whether automated vehicles will provide much more safety for the American driving public. We're past that point, are we not?
Well, thank you, Ranking Member Wicker. It's a great question, and I believe, as Secretary Buttigieg has said, that automated driving systems offer the potential for much more safety as a result of the statistic that you mentioned, as well as offering the opportunity to drive down the cost of transportation and provide more environmental standards.
Okay, so it's at least a twofer there. Senator Thune and I wrote a letter in October raising concern about the apparent lack of agency action regarding autonomous vehicle technologies this year. Received a response last night, which I'd ask unanimous consent to insert into the record.
Without objection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me ask you, Dr. Cliff, what actions will NHTSA take on with regard to AVs that my letter addressed? Can you outline for the committee actions NHTSA will take in, say, the next 6 months with regard to autonomous vehicles? And will the roadway safety strategy set to be released next month include policy on autonomous vehicles?
Thank you for the question, Ranking Member Wicker. Our approach to automated driving technologies is to optimize safety while also leaving room for innovation. Nothing in the Vehicle Safety Act gets in the way of the safe testing and piloting of these technologies. The approach that we're taking is to ensure that we have more data to help inform future actions. And in light of that, we this summer put forth a standing general order which requires the reporting of crash safety data to NHTSA. It's important that we have those data, because in order for us to move forward on any sort of rulemaking, we need additional data and research to inform those actions.
Stephen Cliff, nominated to be NHTSA administrator. Questions from Senator Roger Wicker, top Republican on the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, part of today's confirmation hearing. Insurance Journal writes that Cliff has been a key figure in the Biden administration's proposed rewrite of vehicle fuel economy standards through 2026. And is overseeing its safety investigation of electric car maker Tesla Incorporated. The agency, part of the U.S. Transportation Department, faces a backlog of pending auto safety regulations and has not had a Senate-confirmed administrator since January 2017, the month when Republican former President Donald Trump took office. That from Insurance Journal. Biden administration responding to a video conference between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping on Wednesday, during which Putin said, according to Associated Press, a new model of cooperation has been formed between our countries based, among other things, on such principles as not interfering in internal affairs of each other, respect for each other's interests, determination to turn the shared border into a belt of eternal peace and good neighborliness. There was a question today to USAID Deputy Administrator Isabel Coleman from Washington Post Associate Editor David Ignatius.
We had an interesting event yesterday. Presidents Xi of China and Putin of Russia held their own virtual summit. I don't know what we'd call this. I'll leave you, if you've got a name for what to call their summit, I'd like to hear it. What did you make of that? It obviously seemed to be a response. What's their counter message as President Biden talks about the need to champion democracy?
Well, they referred to our summit as a so-called democracy summit. I think I can throw that back at their so-called summit. It's interesting. We heard a lot of noise from both Russia and China about this democracy summit. In a way that makes me think it caught their attention at a minimum, if not got under their skin in various ways. Their response was not to say, hey, we are authoritarian regimes and we're doing great. Instead, they both said, hey, we're democracies ourselves. So they must see some value in calling themselves democracies, even though I don't believe that they are. The fact is that I think that getting a group of countries together to commit to their own democratic ideals and journey and values, I think is a very important step. And it certainly caught the attention of Russia and China enough that they felt compelled to have their own event.
USAID Deputy Administrator Isabel Coleman with Washington Post Associate Editor David Ignatius, part of a discussion about democracy around the world, was held today by The Post. Also today, the U.S. Senate giving final congressional approval to a bill that bars imports from China's Xinjiang region unless businesses can prove that they were produced without forced labor. President Biden expected to sign it into law, but Associated Press reports this was after initial hesitation from the White House about an earlier version of the bill and what supporters said was opposition from corporations. President Biden awarding today the Medal of Honor to three U.S. Army soldiers for their acts of bravery in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, including Sergeant First Class Alwyn Cash, who suffered fatal injuries in Iraq while rescuing fellow soldiers from a burning vehicle. Today's ceremony was in the White House East Room. Here's the president.
October 17th, 2005. Sergeant Cash was commanding a Bradley fighting vehicle on night patrol in Iraq. They came under enemy fire. An improvised explosive device detonated, igniting the vehicle's fuel and engulfing it in flames. Sergeant extracted himself and without hesitation turned back to the vehicle to help free the driver and extinguish flames on the driver. In the process, Sergeant First Class Cash, uniform, drenched in fuel, caught fire, causing severe burns. Patrol was still taking enemy fire, but Cash thought only of his fellow soldiers trapped in the troop compartment. So he pushed his own pain aside to return to the burning vehicle and pulled four soldiers free, four more. At this point, with the second and third degree burns covering almost 75% of his body, his uniform mostly burned away, the sergeant saw there were still two soldiers and their interpreter unaccounted for. So he went back into the inferno for a third time and got everyone out of that inferno. That was his code. His love for his 3rd Infantry Division ran deep. No soldier was going to be left behind on his watch. And when helicopters began to arrive, he insisted that his troops be evacuated before he would go. Later, at Brooke Army Medical Center in Texas, where he and other members of his team were taken for treatment, when he regained the ability to speak, his first thoughts were for his units. He asked, first thing, how are my boys? How are my boys? Alwyn Cash was a soldier's soldier, a warrior who literally walked through fire for his troops. Sergeant succumbed to his injuries on November 8, 2005, surrounded by those he loved and loved him. He was a hero. He was a beloved son and brother, a proud husband and a father of three children. Sergeant Cash and his family gave everything for our country. Their devotion to his memory, their years working to make sure that his courage and selflessness were properly documented and honored, is a testament to the love he inspired and the legacy he left behind. Sergeant First Class Cash is now the 7th individual to receive a Medal of Honor for his actions in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and the first African-American to receive it since the Vietnam War.
President Joe Biden at today's White House ceremony. The two other soldiers that he awarded the Medal of Honor to today, Sergeant First Class Christopher Solis, an Army Ranger who died after stepping between Taliban fighters and a U.S. helicopter evacuating wounded in 2018, and Master Sergeant Earl Plumley of Special Forces, who fought off Taliban after an attack in Afghanistan in 2013. Medal of Honor is the U.S. government's highest and most prestigious military decoration that can be awarded to recognize acts of valor during wartime. According to the Medal of Honor Historical Society of the United States, there have been over 3,500 individuals awarded the decoration since its creation, over 40% of those for actions during the Civil War. You can find today's ceremony in its entirety at our website, cspan.org. And thanks for listening today to Washington Today. For more of Washington's top stories sent directly to you each day, subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word at c-span.org/connect. Hope you have a good night.